We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Nobody uses more pens, nor is more finicky about their pens than Jason Benetti. In fact, he still, from our first year together, he still accuses me of stealing one of his pens, which, I said, look, I'm not above stealing your pens. And if I can get away with it, I probably would have. However, that particular time, I did not steal it. So there was this something that he has not let go of to this point. There's this one missing pen that remains somewhere in the ether, disappearing in the booth. Maybe there's a Bermuda triangle somewhere between us, but I never took the pen. But yeah, he's got lots of pens. He does a lot of different things on his scorebook.
Middays on the Score.
Jason Benetti has his pens. Stoney has his depends. The top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Dix and the Wildcats host Nebraska and Maryland this fall at Ryan Field. Buy tickets now at nusports.com. Let's talk to our guy, Jason Benetti, shall we? He is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, the play-by-play voice for White Sox television and so many other things. And, dude, what's with the beard?
I decided that if I wanted to be cheap Nick Offerman, I'd have to look a little bit more like a mountain man. No, I had some exposure because I did Bulls Nets, and then the Horizon League had a couple people who tested positive, and I was there. So I just stayed in for 2 weeks that just cleared recently, and I was like, what am I going to do, right? And why do I need not to have a beard?
It's there's some power to the beard. There's a connection between the mustache and beard, which I am jealous of. I'm not a man that the mustache is ever going to go into the beard on. Is it sticking around? Is it television friendly? Is it something that's going to live with you for a while?
No. Actually, my face woke me up last night. It's kind of scratchy. Connor, are you in the basement? And does Dan know that you're in the basement?
I am. I've been lying the entire morning. I stayed in the basement. I had some food delivered overnight. Dan, we're pulling a parasite down here is what we're doing.
See, I would have seen you there because that's where the printer is where I can print out all my puzzles. And you know what? I have to admit, I can't make fun of you, Jason, when it comes to being a little bit finicky in particular about pens, because my kids know me is the same way, that there are certain pens for certain things at certain times, and I am equally particular about them. So I think you and I are cut from similar cloth in that regard. I'm with you.
Yeah, well, what happened was my green pen, which I use for walks, just flat out disappeared one day. Like, I didn't have it for the game. Walks were in a different color, and I was like, Stoney, look, I get that, like, I get you're a lovable scamp, this is like one thing, we just can't be doing this because it's a vocational hazard and I get tense and all this. And then, no joke, the next day, I get to the booth and this green pen is just sitting on the counter alone. Like somebody had taken it for a day and then put it back. So to me, it's exactly what you would do if you were Steve Stone. That's all I'm saying. I don't know if he did it or not. But like somebody put the pen back, and I don't know who it was.
Are you pens or no pens? Are you thinking about following suit with some play-by-play of mundane activities? We heard Joe Buck do some mundane play-by-play earlier in the show. We've seen some other guys get into that. You're a guy known for the prolific nature of your broadcasts. You get into a whole lot of different stuff. What are you thinking about broadcasting next?
Honestly, I'm letting everybody do that. Yesterday I've not been very active on Twitter at first because I kind of needed to process everything going on. And, yesterday I started doing this thing where people send me letters, to loved ones that they want me to read as videos. And to me, in an era where we're separated, that's kind of where I'm going to stay at this point, because I got some of the most beautiful notes of people wanting to say things to loved ones that they've never really said, that they wanted me to say for them by video. And it was actually extremely heartwarming.
When you think of opening day, what have your experiences been, either as a minor league broadcaster, a major league broadcaster? What opening day memories stand out for you, maybe even as a fan?
Yeah, I've not done many opening days with the Sox, because when Hawk was here, he was doing opening day. So I would jump in on day two, but the first Sox game I did in 2016, the Sox got me a suite and some friends of mine from around the country and my family, and some people came in and watched the game. And if you recall, it was the game. There was a game where they closed the upper deck because of ice, and so like people were waiting outside, mm-hmm. and it was pretty cold, and this is my first Sox game, and, you know, people are late to get into the stadium, and late in the game, Avi Garcia hit a homer. And, like, Dan, you've known me for a long time. Like, to me, when I show up to do a game, I'm ready for this. I know I can do this. Like, I knew I was ready to do this job. I'd done a lot of minor league games. I knew I was ready to do this job. But Avi Garcia hit a homer in, like, the seventh inning of that game. And I don't really know why it happened, and I still don't, but I started to, like, tear up after I finished the call. And it was like, man, this is real. Like, I can't believe this is actually happening. And you go through broadcast journalism school, and you do a ton of minor league games, and you kind of separate yourself because you're not doing games of teams that you grew up watching when you're in the minors. And then you sit down, and you're like, I'm a pro. I'm ready for this. I can be a Sox fan, and I can also be the announcer, and I can separate the two, but I don't really want to separate the two. And then, like, your emotions take over. And to me, it wasn't an opening day, but it was my first game, and it was awesome. And the other part of that first game that was amazing and speaks to the almost odd level of detail that some friends of mine at the Sox and some friends of mine around the country do go through to make an experience great. A friend of mine from college, I lived with five people for my junior and senior years of college at Syracuse, and we had this running gag that a party is better if you have a pineapple at the party. And so we would have a house party, and we would go and buy a pineapple and just like put the pineapple on the banister at the bottom of the staircase. And so evidently a friend of mine from college called Scott Reifert at the Sox, who's got vice president in his title, and was like, right. can you go buy a pineapple for Jason without him knowing? And I was like, so I show up in the booth, my first ever Sox game, and there's a box for the headset with the cough button and talk back and like monitors and a freaking pineapple.
That is... How did that start?
You know, I have no idea. I do not recall. We had all sorts of odd things we did in college, and some of them were just like a bright idea of somebody, and some were like a horrible idea of somebody. I don't remember how this one started, but like for an example, we used to when ESPN had Big Monday as a triple header, they had Mountain West games on at midnight, and it was either Dave Pasch and Jimmy Dykes or Bob Carpenter and Jimmy Dykes. And we used to, we had this passed down to us from some upperclassmen. We used to host Mountain West Monday, which is where we had like 20 people in the house to watch the Mountain West game that night. But everybody was assigned a team, and like if your team was playing that night, you had to get there early, and like if you showed up late, we literally locked the door at the under 16 timeout of the first half. Like it's a completely ridiculous, like somebody showed up late once, but they really wanted to get back in, and we had them write like a 10-page paper about the history of the Mountain West.
I love the dedication to the bit. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jason, have you given thought to what your emotions will be like when we resume baseball?
I think about that a lot, actually, and it's amazing because, you know, when you do it for a living or when, you know, I have friends who love sports and I have some friends who, like, I think it's natural to want to have friends who don't really understand sports because, like, for me, you want to be around people who don't want to talk about it 24/7, just as a balancer for life. And for me, over the last 14 days, like, I know sports creates some of my identity, and it creates a lot of my social life, just traveling for ESPN and White Sox stuff. But I didn't realize, I guess, how much I and we all would miss it, and how necessary it is. Just because, like, I would give anything right now to just high five somebody, like a random drunk person over a double in the gap. Like, to me, that's the most amazing part of the day baseball comes back in full glory. Like, we may have empty stadiums for a time, or we may be playing somewhere else for a time. That's not based on insider knowledge. It's just conjecture that I've heard from a lot of people, and we've all heard it. But for me, the excitement of getting back to a ballpark is getting back to being able to the whole concept of not knowing your neighbor and being able to share this with them. Like, that's the thing that hurts about sports being gone, is the building of community that is missing from that. And I know that's somewhat cliched, but literally just like passing a beer down an aisle after somebody gives you a five, and then like the change comes back, not that beers are $5 anymore, but that whole idea, like everything we did at a sporting event is everything we can't do now. So it's just going to be an opening of everybody's soul again.
Well, that's what we talked about at the start of the show, Jason, just talking about what not having baseball, this is the day on which we were supposed to have baseball, and how baseball in the background, it fills in some cracks for a lot of people. It fills things in where having it, whether it is following your own team or having the community, the conviviality of it, it just means we've got to be more creative and find other ways to do it, that we do have social media allowing us to do it. We mentioned during our midday midway segment of how some performers, how musicians are giving free concerts or giving concerts where they can help raise money for charity. I'm wondering how baseball players and what athletes in general can do if they can't sit down at a piano and entertain. There've got to be ways that so many of these athletes who are interesting in a lot of different ways can help people continue to connect.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's even as simple as like talking about stories from the clubhouse, or talking about like what makes teamwork so important, and your crazy baseball stories from back in the day, whatever it is. Like, every minute of baseball season brings players near one another. Like, they are very rarely alone as well. Like, guys get to the clubhouse sometimes at like 1 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game, or even before. So to me, it's just making, I mean, along with playing sports with your kids in the backyard, or like just throwing bullpen. Like, I've seen people post bullpen sessions because that's some form of baseball. So I think what players, like, more players have hobbies than people think. And it's a matter of cultivating those, whether it's video games or like everybody's got like hidden talents. Like, I could envision a world where like MLB did a thing with a player every day, and it was like hidden talents. And we saw that somebody does a Rubik's Cube and somebody else plays the recorder, like whatever it is. These guys are interesting people. It's just a matter of unearthing what version of interesting they are.
Talking with Jason Benetti, White Sox play-by-play man here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, 670 The Score. Jason, we've gotten a couple of like hardcore. Well, I guess we got to separate, you know, White Sox questions from, you know, the what is happening with the baseball season questions. So aside from when are we going to start and what does it look like when we do start, the question I've heard the most as it regards the White Sox is what does this do to Michael Kopech and his availability when the season begins? I wonder your answer to that question and what question have you gotten most as it concerns the White Sox?
The question I got most in my direct messages when I wasn't posting on Twitter was, are you okay? which is very nice of people. So the question I've got, I don't really have a, I'm not getting a lot of White Sox questions right now simply because I think people's minds are kind of elsewhere. Also, I'm just not out, right? So like the access point to me for White Sox questions has not been terribly open. So the Kopech thing, I mean, I'm fascinated by how anybody rehabbing is keeping up with the daily progress, and I haven't learned what he's doing to make sure that he's keeping up. But, I mean, you can envision a scenario in which that a delay nominally helps the White Sox because of Rodon and Kopech, but again, you got to build these guys up. And so just when we're starting to get even more literature about Tommy John surgery and what possible causes can be, et cetera, just as we're squaring that up, we have a period where we can't do any of the stuff that we normally do in large part, especially under the supervision of a team. So it's kind of Wild West. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? And I think anybody, it's tough for me to envision what that might look like just because we're so deep down a crisis scenario that all the normal plans that you would typically do punditry off of are wiped out.
The Score is doing its part to bring you a little bit of White Sox baseball tonight. Starting at 6 p.m., Joe Ostrowski and Chris Tannehill are going to host a live pregame show, and then there's going to be a replay of Mark Burley's perfect game, and then Joe and Chris are going to take calls as part of a White Sox postgame show once the final out is recorded. So if you're looking for something to do, that's tonight at 6 o'clock. Where were you when Mark Burley pitched the perfect game?
Where was I, actually? I mean, I was doing minor league baseball somewhere, and I think I was in Syracuse at the time. I think it was a home game. So the thing about it is, when you're doing minor league baseball and you're the PR representative, you kind of get separated from everything going on in major league baseball. And it wasn't like MLB TV was as prolific as it is now, even 10 years ago. So I think I was doing a game in Syracuse at the time. But you kind of, you lose Major League Baseball a little bit when you're in the minors, truthfully.
I completely get that. I mean, yep. you look up at some point, you go, oh, look, they're in first place. I didn't know that they had won 55 games in a row or whatever. I mean, you miss big stuff when you're working minor league baseball in the big leagues because you're just so focused on things. I know, Jason, you mentioned that the everyday punditry of this sport and of many sports goes by the wayside. But much like, you know, the question I asked you about how you've thought about what your emotions will be like when baseball comes back, I wonder if you've given thought to your and your brethren's, you and your play-by-play brethren's openness to baseball looking different when it comes back. And I mean that in terms of a schedule. I mean that in terms of, you know, not necessarily playing your whatever's left of your 162, but the potential of Major League Baseball offering something completely different in order to get some games in and have some sort of championship ending to 2020.
You have to. I mean, you're talking to a guy who's advocated for a triples derby on White Sox telecast. So, like, I'm all for the bizarre, the strange. Like, let's make this work. Let's figure out a way that we can make this work. in the best way and the safest way possible. But if it takes doubleheaders, it takes doubleheaders. If it takes rearranging where you're playing games, it takes that. You can't just say, well, we're standing on ceremony and it's got to be this way, because if you do that, you're not going to have a season. Like, you can't have it the regular way when there's a crisis of this magnitude in terms of public health. And this is the perfect scenario in one regard creatively, because baseball might find solutions out of desperation that can inform the game in the future. So I think it's a perfect opportunity to try things that might be different, because you have to. I mean, you just have to. And for my brethren as announcers or whatever it might be, people covering the game, I think it completely changes. Like, if baseball woke up one day 4 months ago and said, you know what, 2020 in its regular form is going to be 162 games, but every Monday you're going to have off and every Tuesday is going to be a doubleheader, people would freak out. But in this scenario, whatever they come up with, as long as the players are okay with it and everybody agrees, people just want to see baseball. Like, the small, the nitpicky, that all goes away, and I think it should. And if people start writing columns like, well, this is baseball in an altered form, and I don't stand for it, then mm-hmm. sit down. Like, don't. Right. Then don't. Like, just enjoy what we have, and let's all get outside and watch a game in whatever form it's in.
Jason Benetti, here's to your continued good health. I'm sure you're checking in on Stoney as much as I am checking in on Uncle Terry to make sure they're hanging in there. So, Here's to baseball as soon as we can get it, and a happy enough opening day. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jason.
Hey, thanks, guys.
That is Jason Benetti, the television voice of the White Sox. We are Bernstein and McKnight. Guess what we have coming up next?
What's next?
Next is the magical mystery jar.
Well?
Yeah. Okay.
So we're going to go anywhere. And tomorrow at this time. Tomorrow at this time, we will be lining up phone calls and getting your emails ready. We're doing Friday Fung tomorrow, quarantine culinary creations. Out of necessity, out of creativity, out of inspiration, whatever you've put together to eat that is new or interesting because you've been finding it around the house, that's what we're going to be getting ready to do tomorrow at this time on Friday Fung. But right now, it's the MMJ coming your way on The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Jar.
Step it right this way.
right, we're doing this again. It was really fun yesterday when we never know, because sometimes we get exotic questions that end up with not-so-exotic responses, or we get mundane questions that end up with some of the best stuff we've had. We have no idea where it's going to go, and that's why it's fun. Connor McKnight, are you ready?
Absolutely. After yesterday's trip through the Magical Mystery Jar, I'm pretty stoked for Thursday's Magical Mystery Jar experience.
All right, Rick Camp.
Stop it.
Just a little extra for today.
Yeah, just a little bit. So Mike wants to know, what exactly does Ray Diaz do in the back, so to speak?
Oh, it's what, Dan, what doesn't Ray Diaz do?
Well, Ray's the glue that holds it all together. He literally is in the back of the producer's studio. He's facing in the other direction. So in a usual circumstance, we can only see the back of his head, and he usually will acknowledge his show open credit by pumping his right fist in the air. But mm-hmm. He sits at his computer, and he grabs sound. He arranges the podcast. I mean, Rick, you could probably better describe it than we can.
Yeah, pretty much anything that falls through the cracks that either I didn't have time to get to before the show starts, or something that comes up during the show if it's not the podcasting. Also, interviews that happen on the morning show or our show that are worthy to be cut up so that either when we have updates, they can be played during updates, or so other shows can use them. Ray handles a lot of that stuff because Ray, for one thing, Ray's shift sucks. He gets here at 3:30 in the morning, and he's here until, in theory, like 11:30, I think, is about what his shift's supposed to be. So he does a lot of work for the morning show and for our show along those lines of prep of audio, podcasting, cutting up interviews. If Jay and I are stuck in here for whatever reason, then Jay or Ray might run to the printer for us, something like that, run a new read-in if there's new copy, run that into you guys. So yeah, anything behind the scenes that we, you know, just need someone to fill that hole, for lack of a better term, Ray's there for it.
Well, and here's the other thing about Ray Diaz. I think, quite frankly, Mike Mulligan would collapse into a bowl of steamed broccoli if Ray Diaz wasn't there. I mean, the man relies on Ray Diaz to lift his spirit and his mood. And let's be honest, when you've got Kevin Zipak on the show, you need that to happen.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think that shouldn't go unsaid, that the natural counterbalance to Zipak, you know, he provides that sort of that necessary presence.
He's the antidote. He's the antidote to Kevin Zipak. And I'm so glad for Mully that he has Ray Diaz each and every day.
Yeah, and Ray is also easily the nicest person that works around here, which isn't necessarily the highest of bars, but hey, I mean, Ray cleared it. So yeah, Ray is by far the best person. So if we have like, hey, should I say this? And Ray will be like, probably not. Okay, let's cross that one off the list. But, you know, a lot of times if you end up offending Ray, the one that takes a lot, but also we know that he takes the most crap in his job, and he still comes in and has a great attitude, much better than any of us. So all the credit to Ray.
There you go. Let's open the jar again.
Okay, this one's only a slightly different question. So all kitchen faucets now only dispense soup. Which soup makes this turn of event most or least manageable?
Ooh.
Oh, great. Awesome.
Can we assume that the soup coming out of the kitchen faucet is hot? Can we assume a temperature of said soup?
Yes, I think we should assume hot soup unless you want gazpacho. And I also think we should assume that there's no screen and or issue with like beans or bits of pasta or anything coming through as well. It should be able to come through as it's constituted.
Sure. I think those are fair stipulations. I think what makes this turn out best is going to be different than your favorite soup being dispensed from every kitchen sink, correct?
Right, because as much as I love New England-style clam chowder,
Yeah.
That would get a little overwhelming to have a constant stream of kitchen faucet New England style clam chowder. I think the right answer, by soup metrics, the right answer is probably a well-made chicken stock, because that can be used for so many things and as a base for so many other things.
I knew you were going there, but a chicken stock does not a soup make. That is a stock and not a soup. The question is asking for a soup. You know what I'm saying? So I think you're along the right lines. I would change it, though. A cream of mushroom is a soup and can be used in a number of different cooking applications. You know, I make a homemade cream of mushroom for the green bean casserole, for instance. You could throw that into a bunch of different things, but I also don't know that I would just, you know, I would go to the faucet for a bowl of cream of mushroom more than like once or twice. You know, I mean, that's a tough soup to go after.
No, as far as nutritional value, I would think a minestrone soup would be able to provide fully balanced nutrition for a healthy family. Like, you could eat pretty much every meal nothing but a minestrone soup that's got protein in the beans, and it's got your green vegetables and the tomato base and everything else. Yeah. So as far as public health, it might be minestrone.
What if we just said the hell with it and went with a real thick beef stew? You know, something with everything in it. You can pick stuff out if you want to make it a specific meal or whatever. If you just want the carrots today because you've had beef stew the last four or five. Is a stew not a soup? Am I missing it?
A stew is a stew. A stew, you're talking about, there's a thickening agent, either flour or cornstarch or something. Like, a chili isn't a soup. Beef stew
no.
isn't a soup.
Are we counting cereal soup?
No, we're not.
Cereal isn't
is cereal.
Soup. It's not cooked.
What would be nice is if you had a little dial and any soup you wanted, it could be like, you know, like the gun at a bar where you could just have whatever soup come out you wanted. That'd be fine by me.
Soup gun. That's the next gun that Dan McNeil and I are going to invest in. It's net gun. We need a net gun, and we need a soup gun. Those are the two guns we need.
Do they go on the mustard belt?
Yeah.
They can.
You need a mustard belt to handle those things.
All right, hit it, Rick.
Connor? Someone wants to know a story on air you haven't told about your times in Madison.
Oh,
that won't get you arrested.
Let me think. Have I told the one about how I'm banned for life from a particular bar in Madison? I forget if I've told that on air or just to you guys.
I think you've mentioned it. I don't know that you've given the Bernstein and McKnight listener the full picture of that.
Okay. So I'll tell this one as best I can. It was my 21st birthday, which already we're behind the eight ball. And the day prior, I was just gonna hang out and not do much. And then the actual birthday were big plans. But as it happens, I was at home. You know, birthday's in the summer, and I was in Madison. Some friends came over to the house kind of one by one as I was just watching a ball game, because, you know, that's what I do, and they brought some beverages over. One thing leads to another, and the night before ends up being a full-blown, you know, evening. So the next day, we're going out for the actual celebration, right? And we end up going to a place, and I'm already one night in, and even at, you know, 20 or now just 21, it had taxed me a little bit. So we go to a bar in Madison, Wisconsin called the Essen House. And the Essen House is famous because it's this old German beer house. There are a couple of them, you know, here in town. I'm sure people have been to them. You're drinking beer out of a boot. It's a giant, I think it's 5 liters. And the whole game that you play while you're drinking out of a boot is that there are a whole bunch of different rules. I'm not going to remember all of them.
Oh, the boot. I've played the boot. And that's where you have to, like, flick it. You know, there's, like, a flick, drink, flick, mm-hmm. pass. And it's, okay,
yep.
I've done that.
You can't let the boot touch the table. If you pass the boot and the person that you pass it to ends up finishing the boot, you have to buy the next boot.
Did that start at the Essen House? Is that their thing?
It may have. I just always figured it was an old German drinking game that was invented back in the motherland or whatever. But the Essenhaus has rules posted on the walls. And I know that because I got real familiar with the walls in the Essenhaus. So night goes on, and you know, I'm being you can kind of game this game so that one person has to finish the boot every time. So of course that's me, because it's my 21st birthday. I end up losing it in a particular corner of the Essenhaus, and I remember being tapped on the shoulder by a guy wearing lederhosen, because that's what the servers wear. And I remember turning around and looking at this guy wearing lederhosen, thinking that I was just in a bad dream because I had already gone so far down the road, and looking at him and going, "You're wearing lederhosen." And he goes, "Yeah, well, you've thrown up all over the ballroom here at the Essenhaus, so you need to leave." So I left. They took my ID. It was photocopied and put up on the wall behind the Essenhaus on the list of lifetime bans. And I was told just a few years ago that it is still there. I haven't gone back since, but that is that's most of the story of how I was banned for life from the Essenhaus in Madison, Wisconsin.
Can you appeal it? Is it like a sports, like a drug suspension where you can apply for reinstatement?
I mean, if I could get in there, I'm sure that I could make a pretty convincing case. But I don't, you know, security's tight at the Essenhaus, Dan. It's a German bar, for God's sakes. They don't let the rules breakers in.
Rehabilitated, Sonny. Now you just go and stamp your forms. I would tell that stupid young man right now. That has been the Magical Mystery Jar. If you do have a topic, if you want something you want us to discuss, feel free to reach out and go to @Bernstein_MCK on Twitter and just send a direct message, and yours might get selected for however long we are reliant on the Magical Mystery Jar. Not tomorrow, however. Fridays are special on our show often, and we're going to keep them special. We're going to do Friday Fung tomorrow at 11:20, quarantine culinary concoctions. Your creativity for what you have come up with interesting ingredient juxtapositions in this time of quarantine. Now, I'm going to play a little game here. When we come back, apropos of nothing, I promised my son I would do this because he did this to me, and he said, "Guess this player." And I did not get it. And he's like, "You should do it on the show. Do it on the show. Do this on the show. See how many people get it." And Okay. So I will fulfill that promise. And I'm going to ask you now as we go to break. When we come back, I'll reveal the answer. And this is a basketball player, okay? Who am I? Who am I? I am a two-time NBA champion. I am a one-time NCAA champion. An NCAA tournament most outstanding player, and my number 15 has been retired by my college, which is a major basketball powerhouse.
Wow.
Okay?
Yeah, it's a good
major,
one.
Major basketball powerhouse. My number's retired. I am a two-time NBA champ, an NCAA champ, and a tournament most outstanding player. Who am I?
Good question.
Think about it.
The answer is coming up in just a few. It's Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Bernstein and McKnight finishing up a Thursday edition of the show with a little bit of trivia, and I've got that answer for you in just a moment, but I have been told that there is a call that's been holding that we should take, so we are going to do so. Tom on the South Side is on the Score. Hi, Tom.
Hello, gentlemen. How you doing today? Let's celebrate the no-opener in fashion, and even though they can take away the games, they can't take away our team spirit. So what I've decided to do, since I am on home isolation and I'm working from home, I'm going to follow both the White Sox and the Chicago Cubs in their regularly planned 2020 season. And at the end of each proposed game time, I will roll the dice, two dice for the visiting team, two dice for the home team, and determine who wins. If each of our teams win, the W will fly, and if they don't win, they will not. We will celebrate with Vienna Chicago-style dogs, beefs, Jay's potato chips, Cracker Jack and peanuts, topped off by Salerno butter cookies. And for Dan's edification, wondering how the dice thing would work, I did a simulated season of only 16 games via dice rolls, and the visitors won 6 of those games. The home team won 10 of those games, which translates into a 61.11 winning percentage for home teams. So I went back to 2015 for just the Cubs only, took 2015, 16, 17, 18, and 19 for 5 full years. At home, the Cubs were 236 and 158 for a home winning percentage of 62.5, so a variance of 1.4% in a 10-game simulated dice roll season versus 5 years of data. What do you think?
Go Bears! I think you've thought this through, Tom, and I wish you the best of luck, whatever it takes to make it feel as real and as meaningful as possible. If that's what gets you through, more power to you. And I guess we can check in at various points in the simulated season to see how our teams are doing. So thank
I
you
love
for
how
that.
Dedicated to the bit he was. And I don't know, Dan, I don't know if you noticed, but as Tom continued listing the items he was going to eat in celebration of the wins,
Blammers.
It got more and more meatball-y, my friend. And by the time we were talking about the Salerno butter cookies, it was like Bob had called on a Monday. It was
you know what I mean? I was thinking that, too, that he always going to get to that point of, you get the corn dog, you got to de-stick it, the okey-doke popcorn, Blammers. There it is. All right. All right. So here you go. The criteria once again for a little question here. A 2-time NBA champ, a 1-time NCAA champ, and NCAA tourney most outstanding player. This man's number 15 was retired at Kansas. Does that help you at all? This player.
Ooh.
Anything?
Oh.
I gave you the school.
Okay. So my first guess. Rick, in complete honesty, Rick and I were talking a little bit during the break because this is kind of a toughie because I don't remember numbers for players at all and ever. I am not Daniel in that instance. Of course, he doesn't watch basketball, so there's a difference there too. I was going to go with Shane Battier, but obviously he didn't go to Kansas now that you've offered that. But it's not Ryan Arcidiacono, even though he was most outstanding player of the tournament and still wears Jim Nance's tie whenever he plays NBA games. I won't tell you where he wears it, though. You can't see it. Is it fairly recent?
Relatively. The answer...
It's Danny Manning, isn't it?
It is not. It's Mario Chalmers.
Oh...
How about that?
Wow, Mario Chalmers. You know what? I was watching on the night the NBA canceled the season, or maybe it was the night after. It was the night after the NBA canceled the season. One of the networks, I want to say it was ESPNU or something, was re-airing the Big 12 title game between Kevin Durant's Texas Longhorns and one of, because Chalmers was there, I think that would have been 08, right? And Mario Chalmers' Kansas teams. Mario Chalmers was tough, man.
Yes.
I mean, that guy, he hit shots. He would play defense. He'd get all up in you. I mean, he was a bitch. He got down there and was ready to foul. He was ready to take a charge. He'd offer plenty of contact. Mario Chalmers at Kansas was a tough mother.
If you also had said LeBron liked yelling at this player more than any player he was ever teammates with, then I would have gotten it.
I would have gotten that faster than the first way,
It's funny, the top of mind, my Mario Chalmers thought, is when the Harlem Shake videos were being done. You remember those? And you had Chris Birdman Anderson and the Miami Heat Harlem Shake video where Mario Chalmers was dressed as actual Nintendo Mario was memorable to me.
That is good.
So many people are responding to Southside Tom and his little dice roll game saying, well, if you're going to do this, why don't you do it with Stratomatic cards? Well, you know, this kind of thing has been done before. Channel 9's Rich King, when I was working at Channel 2 in 1989, and Kingfish was still there then at the time doing some weekend stuff, he played, just for fun, the entire 1959 season for Stratomatic.
No way.
Yeah, every game. And not just the White Sox. Like he's been a long time White Sox fan. He played every single game of the 59 season on Stratomatic.
That is dedication, Holmes. That's
yep.
what that is.
Yep, and that's not a computer thing like simulate it, click, and it's over. That's playing it out.
No, you got to roll every die. You got to make decisions too, because you'll have. I would imagine if you go back, we played a little Stratomatic back when I was a kid, and you would have some of these old timey players. I forget exactly what the rating was. Maybe it's like you get like double A ratings for speed or something like that. And there's a handful of old timey players. I want to say Tris Speaker's one. That has a speed rating, a steal rating, that is basically roll any number but a 20, and he steals the bag.
Wow.
So, you know, we would do, you know, me and the neighbors and stuff, we would do like fantasy drafts of whatever cards we had. And Speaker, I think, would always go real early on in a draft, because as long as you could get him on, you could take every bag and literally make a single, or just getting on anyway, into a triple. Because you could only throw them out by rolling the 20. And then, you know, obviously stealing home changes the math on that sum. But all those weird kind of quirky aspects of Stratomatic made it a blast to play.
I could say that judging by the response to playing a sports trivia, who is this player, I have a feeling we're going to do more of this. Because the response, I mean, it's insane. It's just absolutely blowing up the text line and on Twitter and... Every modality we have here. So maybe we'll make that a fun little thing going forward if people seem to enjoy it that much. So
I think that's a good idea. We also, just looking on the text line, a lot of people did guess Shane Battier before you gave the Kansas part of the clue.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people had Mario Chalmers right.
Yeah, they did.
They nailed it. Way to go.
Well, maybe they saw it in the same place my kid did, because he gets, you know, it used to be, and I kind of feel obsoleted by this, where he always used to be like, hey, what's going on in sports? Any news? Anything happen? And now, because he's on Instagram and he has all of these automatic alerts, he yep. gets everything like before I do, and will text me things, and it hasn't gotten into my Twitter feed, or I wasn't paying attention or something like that. So now it always used to be, hey, Dad, what happened in sports? And now he's like, yeah, I know. I saw it. I know. My friends told me.
So well, are we... Is the social distancing going to get Dan Bernstein on the gram? Like, is this what it's going to be?
I don't think... I think Twitter is going to be... for me. I think that's fine. I just don't have the video content or the visual content to share that Instagram requires. I
think you do. You post your cooking photos, Ben, and if you get out there, start gardening
yeah.
like you were going to the other day. You've got cooking photos and gardening photos. You could get it straight from farm to table right there in your own backyard with the basil into a pesto.
And you know what we didn't do today? We have yet to wish Shane Reardon a happy birthday, because, you know, he loves all that birthday attention, so we should
Absolutely.
Make sure that we celebrate. Not only is it opening day, we kind of buried the lead here. It's Shane Reardon's birthday. So happy birthday to one of the absolute craziest people I know, who does so much around the score behind the scenes. You know, it's one thing to talk about the stuff that Ray Diaz does on a production level, but
yeah.
on an executive production level and operations level, I should say, Shane has been invaluable in these times.
You know, normally we would just give Shane a bunch of hell for having a birthday today, but you're right. And whether it's Shane or Mitch, really, too, the level of coordination that it takes to continue doing what we're doing and just having the show, and hopefully it comes across as just a normal show that might sound a little different. But this has taken a whole lot out of these guys to put this stuff together, and I'm really glad... you know, that we're able to do what we're doing and keep doing it as normally as possible, because it's helped. Yeah, you know, I mentioned it earlier in the week. This has helped me as much as I know a lot of people have texted in and called in and tweeted about. Doing this has helped me as much as y'all hearing it has seemingly helped you. And we're just gonna keep this going as long as we absolutely can, because it seems as necessary as any other kind of therapy going on right now.
It has certainly served that purpose for me. I don't know what I would do without these 3 hours a day, these 3 hours of interconnection, of being here, of knowing there are so many people who are part of this community. And this community is important, this SCORE community, and the community within that at Bernstein and McKnight. I agree with you. It's incredibly important to my day, to my mental health. And as a reminder, make sure you're taking care of your mental health. Make sure you're talking to people. Make sure you're listening to doctors. Make sure you're listening to people who listen to doctors. Wash your hands, stay distant, and get a little fresh air when you can. And even if you're going a little bit stir crazy, try to breathe and be kind out there. Everybody needs a little bit extra. We got to work a little bit harder at it, and we will get through this. Thanks.
It'll also
Ron Coomer.
Be helpful for everybody to listen in to Mark Burley's Perfect Game at 6 o'clock tonight on the
Go. 6 o'clock. Thanks to Jason Benetti, Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, Ray Diaz, Shane Reardon, Mitch Rosen, our engineers, everybody involved. Have a healthy day, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Lawrence Holmes coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.